You are listening to the Vital MX Post-Race Show, presented by Decal Works.
Welcome to the Decal Works Post-Race Show on Vital MX. The third round of 2024 Monster Energy Supercross has been and gone. And finally, we've had a thriller on our hands with plenty of discussion points. Maybe we still haven't learned a lot, but we definitely have a lot to speculate about, a lot to predict, and a lot to break down from Snapdragon Stadium. This is the Decal Works post-race show on Vital MX. Thanks to our presenting sponsors, Fox Racing and Beta. Yes, Beta. They'll be with us all year long and making sure that this post-race show happens. Each and every week, there are still 28 races to go, so a lot of podcasts to come. And Decal Works, our title sponsor, 1 and 2. In the 450 class standings at the moment. So what more do I need to say about Decal Works' quality and sheer professionalism other than that? That literally says it all. I am your host, Lewis Phillips, as per usual, joined by Michael Lindsay. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. We finally have a round with a lot to talk about.
Yeah, in a way, the beginning of this season has dragged because it's almost been like, oh, just give us the answers already. Like, this is kind of like we're almost still waiting for the Anaheim 1 hallelujah moment. San Diego was closer to that. I definitely don't feel like I have a complete picture on who's great and who's going to win this championship. We'll get into that. But yeah, honestly, I was thinking about it earlier, and I don't know who my championship pick would be, which is also exciting. I think that at the moment, we have 6 riders who are on top form, those being Plessinger, Webb, Roczen, Jett, Chase, Eli. Was that 6 or was that 5?
That was 6.
Okay, good. With Anderson right on the cusp. So we have a lot of riders on top form. And yeah, I think this will be interesting. First things first. By the time the main events came around, that was not a mudder anymore. Correct?
Correct. And I was talking to riders about that at the end. It's kind of weird because I think if you look back on it and you say the race, like we were saying, oh, we've had 2 mud races in a row. Like last weekend is what you think of like true mud race, like literally rolling around slop. I guess, you know, even last weekend we were talking about how, oh, Barsha's good in the mud or Aaron's good in the mud. No, like this weekend's conditions are the ones where I think of Barsha and Plessinger being good. Like it's kind of muddy. It's kind of sloppy, but it's slick and hard packed. It's like really slick to the bases and places. Like when I see those conditions, like I kind of want to talk to Aaron about this. I'm like, oh, this has to be what it was like growing up racing GNCCs. Like ruts to go down to the base. It's really slick. It's kind of been wet, but it's not actually mud anymore. It like rained the day before the race. Like, so yeah, not a true mud race, but and so different than last week. And I think it even shows, you know, some guys still did good, but shows in certain people's results. There are people that are good true mud riders, and then there are people like good or whatever the hell we're calling this.
Yeah, I don't really have a name for what this was. I just kind of describe it as an awkward square edge bumps track. Just an awkward track where you can't really flow. It's kind of just survival, but so technical that it can bite at any moment. Like, yeah, it's kind of like a mudder in recovery.
Well, I'll say, especially as the night goes on, because you get the heats were definitely sloppy. The heats, especially like they start good for the 250s, but then everything got pushed around and they got progressively worse through the heats. But then because we didn't get rain, the guys keep riding and the track dries out. And then this was, I asked a lot of riders, like it got surprisingly tacky and racy in places in the main, but then there were certain areas that you still had to tiptoe. And it was kind of funny to watch riders figure out through the main that they could push harder. Like you could see them all when they started the main still tiptoeing like it was the heat race and then slowly figuring out like, oh, the track's actually coming around. And that definitely played in a part for some guys that were willing to push earlier, kind of figured that out that, hey, I don't have to ride around like last weekend in survival. I can jump things. I can push here. I can push there.
Yeah, to be honest, if Webb had figured that out earlier, maybe he wouldn't have had to work so hard to get to Plessinger, and then this would have been a different story, because in the second half of the race, he was on fire. But the first four laps definitely took him a little while to figure out where the limit was on this track. But before we get to Webb, credit where it's due. Aaron Plessinger is a 450 main event winner. After Detroit last year, there were definitely people, including us, who questioned whether this would ever happen.
Yeah, it happened. Like, what if Detroit was the only... I remember talking about, like, how bad do you feel for Aaron if Detroit was his only shot? But now we can... we no longer talk about that. He got it done.
It happened, and it was a great ride. I'm happy that it happened this week versus last week, because if it happened last week, I feel as though the narrative would have been, oh, AP won the Mudfest, whereas this was a legitimate Supercross in my mind, so I'm happy his maiden win happened in that setting. But more impressive than the win, which is great, is the fact that I believe we can sit here today and say across these first couple of rounds, Plessinger has been the best rider on the whole, the only rider to finish in the top five each time. He was amazing at Anaheim 1. The San Francisco Mudder was definitely his worst ride, but it was still a fifth. And then obviously San Diego was amazing. So yeah, I think that's the story, more so than the win, is on balance, he may have been the best rider through this first stint.
I would agree with that. Everybody, I mean, you just look at everybody else's results have been pretty up and down. His are probably the most solid. It is interesting. I think you threw us that the only two riders that have, I can't believe this, this is not a stat you ever think you would say in general, but especially this early in the season, that somehow Aaron Plessinger and Dylan Frandis are the only two riders to not have been lapped this season. Like, yes. That almost doesn't even make sense to hear out loud.
Yes, credit to at LewisPhillips71 on Twitter for that stat. I imagine you'll hear that a lot of places this week and probably on the broadcast. It came from at LewisPhillips71 on Twitter, first of all. So not sure who that is, but well done to him for working that out at 1 a.m. in the morning. Which, to be honest, maybe it's wrong because it was done at 1 a.m. in the morning, but we hope that it's correct and it stands. But most interesting about that is I would not rule out Ferrandis and Plessinger being lapped at some point. I would almost put money on the fact that at some point this season, we will be in a situation where every single rider has been lapped.
Again, that is a very weird stat to even think about. I just can't process the fact that Jet Lawrence, Chase Sexton, Cooper Webb have been lapped in races. For some reason, when you say Eli Tomac, I can believe it just because Eli's had some really weird up and down races in the past. But yeah, that's not a stat I think we'll ever hear very often in sport.
Yeah, that's why San Diego was just a trip, because five laps or eight laps into the main event, you're watching Tomac, Sexton, and Roczen ride pretty well in like 14th, and not because, oh, they were all in a first turn pileup, all through separate incidents that somehow put them back this far. And it was just, to be honest, a mindfuck. And I can't imagine what it would be like to race in that race, because I'd imagine you don't know who's lapping you, you don't know who you're in a race with. Like, Freddie Norrin was up there for quite a while. And I'd imagine he was just extremely confused about who he was actually racing for position.
Yeah, I think in general, like, it even came up with a few riders. I think at times you get lost at who you're racing against or not. We'll talk about it a little bit more later, but it was even interesting watching, like, when Plessinger got around Tomac, you know, was racing behind him, and guys like Jorge Prado and other people let him by because they didn't know who was on lead lap, who, you know, they're getting blue flags for. And you could see with some riders, they almost gave up on moving over for blue flags because they weren't sure if it was people they were racing for position. It was weird where some guys were out in the field. It just straight up didn't make sense.
Real talk. Do you give Plessinger a realistic shot of this title?
I mean, that's the word hard to say, is realistic. Statistically, is it possible? Of course. If you walk up and ask me, can Aaron Plessinger win this title? I say no, and it's nothing against Aaron. This is his first win. I think the goal at this point would be to try to win again this season. But yeah, I, you know, no matter what, I think you still, no matter where it goes from here, I would cap this off as now a successful season for Aaron Plessinger because he has proved he can win, but I don't think the championship is in the running.
I'm more open-minded at this point, purely because he has been the best rider so far. I will say that for me to double down on him being in this fight for the time being, he would have to ride as well as he did at Anaheim 1, at Anaheim 2, which will be dry. So if he's that good in another dry race, I see no reason why this doesn't turn into him being in the picture somewhat. Obviously, there could be a dip of form at some point, and if that happens, then that changes things. But right now, with the way he's riding, there's been no flukes. He's clearly happy. He said before Anaheim 1, I'm ready to battle for this championship. So he clearly is in a place with the bike and himself where he believes it's possible, which hasn't been the case up until this point. So yeah, I'm open-minded at this point. Honestly, as I said off the top, I don't know who's going to win this championship. I look at this list and everyone has impressed me at some point or another. So I'm not too low on any specific title contender at this point.
Hmm. One I'm curious to ask you, so when we did preseason show, we talked about how many winners we would see in a season. And I'm trying to remember, I can't remember if I said we would get the average 5 or maybe one less at 4. Did you say only 3 or did you say 4?
I think I said most likely just Tomac, Jet, and Chase, with maybe one guy stealing one win elsewhere. But now, I mean, Webb is definitely going to win a race.
Oh, yeah.
Tomac is definitely going to win a race.
Yep.
I would say that Roczen is definitely going to win a race.
Yeah.
And those are the only outliers that I am set on at this point, which is 6. I mean, Anderson could win, and I wouldn't be surprised. Same with Barsha. So, yeah, based on how this has started, if we only end up with 5, which is the average, that would be quite a disappointment.
I was going to say, because I know beginning of season, we always have this conversation. It's like, okay, the average is 5, but we say that, like, there's, you know, there's always that argument. I wouldn't be surprised if these 7 guys can win. You know, we name off the ones that are going to win, and then the 2 or 3, like, they could win. But then usually, by round 3, it's kind of like, no, you know, these guys probably won't win. But again, it's open enough right now where maybe we get lucky and we get the oddball year where we do get more winners. Especially with how it's gone at the beginning, I could definitely see it. I'm going to guess 6 at this point.
So if
we're like estimate, we'll get 6 win different winners.
If we don't have the Webb and Chase debacle, does Webb win this race?
I say more likely than not, but I'm not saying like guaranteed. Like percentage pie, I'm going like 60-40. I think Webb. I guess it's a 2 and without the it's 2 without the Chase incident, I think he gets there and it's a real mix up. If you also cancel out Eli pushing AP's pace up, if you take both those out of the equation of happening, I lean more towards Coop would have got it done.
I would say that I think obviously Webb would have been closer, but I don't think he would have been close enough to attempt to pass. So yes, maybe it would have been an edge of your seat last lap where you look at it with the perspective of if Plessinger slips up, the door is open. But I don't think we would have been in a position with Webb running it up the inside. I just don't. Talking about that incident, my perspective on it is heading into the corner, I did not think the Webb was close enough to get past Chase at that point. Really shocks me how much time Webb gained on that inside rut. I would imagine that Chase was thinking similar. It was 2 lines meeting. If Chase really wanted to hold Webb up, he would have sat in the inside rut. And if he really wanted to hold Webb up, he wouldn't have basically jumped out the main line after that incident. I think it was just a racing incident and effectively summed up by the fact that Webb got there way quicker than anyone expected, or at least I expected.
I agree and disagree. I agree racing incident. I think anybody in there says like 100% he did it on purpose to screw Webb. I think that's an extreme reach, extreme. And I think even when I asked Webb definitely is not happy about it, but he didn't give me any sense that he did it on purpose. But Webb also kind of like basically notion towards, hey, he moved completely out of the way and stopped for Aaron. And then you look at what he did going into that section. He moved out. He went out of the racing line. He went outside, which is not, that has not been a good line in that corner pretty much all day, unless you were battling somebody and you just didn't want to follow. So what I say is Chase made the first effort to get out of the racing way, but then didn't follow through with it, which at these guys' level, they would bitch about any lapper doing that to them. So I think it's just the common courtesy. Hey, you did it for your teammate and you butchered the shit out of it for Webb. So I think on some end, racing an incident, but I do put a little bit of, in a way, a blame on Chase. Like, you need to be better if you're ever in that situation again. But nobody can convince me he did that on purpose.
I think it's pretty obvious why he moved out of the way for AP. It happened after the mechanics area. I would imagine the mechanics for KTM mechanics were clear to Chase.
Well, so, and Chase was getting blue flags for a lap.
Yeah, but maybe he doesn't know if that's AP. Like, if AP was that close on the other side of the track, I don't think that Chase is moving out the way as blatantly. Yeah. I think he moved out of the way so blatantly because the KTM mechanics would have been gesturing so obviously that he was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And that, again, that's the common courtesy, though, to, hey, I'm a lap down. It's Aaron. But again, if it's roles reversed, let's say it is Webb out front. It is Chase. And so let's say they're catching. Okay, let's say it's Tomac that they are catching as a lapper. Then it's Webb leading and Chase in second. They signal to Tomac. He moves out of the way for Webb, but then sort of tries to move out of the way, but doesn't, and ends up colliding with Chase. You would still have Chase be upset as well. Like, Chase would not be like 100%. Oh, no big deal, buddy.
I agree that Webb has grounds to be a bit miffed.
Yeah. And again, that's what I'm saying. Like, I fall under the category. It is a racing incident. There was not ill will and intention, but when it isn't 100% just like completely blameless. Like I said, Chase tried to make an effort to move out of the way, but kind of butchered it and ended up basically causing an issue where, hey, as the old saying goes, there's a race happening and you're not in it. Regardless of if you're a champion, you're the defending champion. If there's a race going on, you're not in it. You could still be better. We can all be better. I could be better at podcasts. I could be a better journalist. I could be a better everything. So at the end of the day, could he have done better? Yes, but I'm not saying again that I you cannot convince me that he did it on purpose. Like, so anybody that's posting that online, whatever conspiracy theory you're on, good luck.
I think that obviously Webb would be miffed because Webb has a dog in the fight. I think that the rest of us talking about it, it's much ado about nothing because, yeah, Webb can be miffed because he had a dog in the fight, and Webb would also be pissed if he stumbled in a rut or made any mistake that hampered his shot at a win. But other than that, it was quite clearly not intentional, because as I say, if it was intentional, Chase would have sat in the inside rut. Whilst we're on the topic, there was also some hoo-ha about Tomac racing so hard once AP lapped him, and Webb, I think, wasn't overly stoked on that either. I almost feel a little more uncomfortable about that than I do the Chase incident, just because that was over such a prolonged period.
Well, the one, like, on one hand, you can sit there and say, and I, it's such a weird one, because on one hand, Eli was smart about it. He's of a quality of rider that he could not only chase AP at one point, actually started reeling back in. And basically, we always use the term ride the blue flag, ride the leader. Like, you sometimes see a back of the pack guy get lucky and they can sort of keep up with the leader for a lap and use it to get one, maybe two guys they're kind of pulling over. But I mean, Eli's good enough quality. He used it to get multiple passes, including, as I mentioned, Jorge Prado was very courteous and got very far out of the way, and it cost him that position against Eli. On one hand, people would normally celebrate that and be like, wow, that's really smart. But also, his teammate behind it, you have Plessinger, who kept commenting that, hey, or Plessinger commented to Webb that he thought it was Webb, so he upped his pace earlier in the race. And then once Coop got, Eli didn't impede Coop, but he didn't roll over in the same way that Chase did for Aaron. So I'm sure the truck, not saying it was Bob, I'm sure there was a conversation like, hey, what was your mind? Like, I'm sure at some point somebody had asked, like, what were you thinking during this time? Like, were you like just a team conversation of like, how do we handle this if we're in this position again?
Yeah, he did not impede Coop in any way, shape, or form, but mentally, if I'm Coop, that's kind of putting me a bit out of sorts because I don't have a clear track. And you know, if you're lapping Chase, Eli, Jet last week, if you're lapping one of these top guys, you come up on them and you're like, okay, this is not going to be an easy guy to lap because he can match my speed. And even after I lap him, he could sit on my tail and that could create problems. So like already when you see Eli, who you've got to lap, I think you're like, oh shit, this is going to cause problems. And then when you're just sat behind Eli for five laps and like, okay, I've still got to lap him. I think you're just mentally a bit like, I don't know how to handle this.
And again, it's funny how people can take things conspiracy theory. I had somebody I know pretty well go, well, you know, during the race, I was thinking that maybe Eli was trying to help Webb and try to pressure Aaron into a mistake. I'm like, what? Like, no. Trust me, that did not go through his head, number one. And number two, like I said, he was almost, if anything, detrimental to him because he was pushing Aaron, and Aaron mentioned having to pick up his pace earlier, where yes, Webb would have got to him, but maybe Webb would have got to him two laps earlier because Aaron wouldn't have wicked it up quite as much. You could argue that as well.
Do we have a repeat winner this weekend, or do we have another new one? Triple crown?
I think we have a new winner. Because I don't, no offense, I don't think it's Aaron on Triple Crown. Jet kind of has that weirdness with Triple Crown that one main always kind of goes a little weird. So I'm just going off history, not saying he can't do it and he's cursed, but it's just, it happens. If we get a repeat winner, it's Chase, but I lean more towards like we finally get like as consistent. I think like Webb gets it, Kenny or Eli at this point. Like I would lean towards one of those three getting the Triple Crown win, maybe even Jason or Barsha. But I think it's one of those other ones we've talked about. I think we go to four winners in four rounds.
Speaking of Barsha, third place, he definitely wasn't 100%, still a little sick from the past weekend. So I think a surprise for him and his team. But he was quietly effective, similar to Anaheim 1, where he just kind of was there and solid without much fanfare. Yeah, just a nice ride in San Diego that got his season back on track.
Definitely that, especially because I would say of the guys that we think of being good earlier in the season, this has been, it's got to be, in how many years, it's got to be the roughest start to a season the Barsha's had in recent memory. So definitely good for him to get back on track because, yeah, to see him with his scores over the first two rounds is very un-Barsha-like to start a season.
Well, this is the first time that he has not had a podium at one of the first two rounds since 2017.
Yeah.
Which means nothing, but there you go. Just a fun little fact. Speaking of Jet, I was not perplexed, but intrigued to see him take the very inside gate in the main event. Because I'm a big, if you're going on the inside, you're not confident in your starts guy.
Yep.
I'm massive on that. I really buy into that. So when I saw Jet go to the inside, I was like, interesting. So someone's maybe lacking a little confidence.
Well, especially I think in Supercross, like outdoors there's tracks it makes sense, but Supercross you're pretty much going off the mentality of I'm just going to try to hug the inside.
And to be honest, he kind of got lucky because he got a terrible start. I think he was 19th.
I know first lap I have a note, him and Hunter were 14th and 15th on the end of lap one, I believe.
Definitely.
13th and 14th. Sorry, Hunter was 13th and Jet was 14th when they crossed the finish line on lap one.
Definitely exiting the first turn, he was around 19th. And if Chase didn't go down, Eli didn't go down, Kenny didn't go down, it would have been a much harder night for him. So actually, although he obviously isn't stoked about missing the podium, I feel like fourth is a great result on a night where after lap one or after the first turn, I very much thought that it was going to be another ninth place.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I know he was frustrated after the race. I kind of stopped by the rig and saw he was not having a good evening. He was definitely very, very frustrated. But ultimately, when you look at the big picture, he came into this round. I believe he was, what, 7 points down on Chase. He exits it only 3 points down on Chase and only 4 points down on Aaron for the lead. So, I mean, technically, he gained points. Yeah, it's not fantastic. But honestly, of everybody we're going to talk about here, Jed had one of the best nights in the sense of for what he was handed situation-wise. He made the best of it.
Some of the shine has definitely gone off Jet over these last two weekends. Mistake in the heat race, I think he is now human again. That's all, and that's not a bad thing, but he's no longer that mystical creature where even the other riders are looking at him thinking, how do I handle this guy?
He's beatable. He's beatable. There was a question mark, regardless of how competent anybody is coming in. Perfect season, the way he handled A1, there was... any of these guys, there had to be a 0.1% moment in their mind they had to question themselves and question what's he capable of and like how are we going to do this. And yes, like you said, he is human again, not only with performances on track, but I think the way you've seen him emotionally handle it, it gives riders a telltale like, okay, yeah, he can be beaten, he can be broken, like we can do this. You know, is he still capable of winning his championship? Of course, he's still a favorite by far. He's in that conversation. But it's, yeah, the perfect season talk is gone. And even the fact that he just didn't rebound, you know, last weekend was really up in the air, but to see kind of even like the after race aftermath, I think definitely took again some of that shine off of just knowing that you can get him frustrated.
I go back to the whole, he has to learn how to lose,
yes.
Discussion point. And talking about the after the race hoo-ha, similar to the Chase Cooper situation, even more of much ado about nothing. Like I saw someone tweet, the way that Twitter's algorithm is now, you see every Supercross related tweet. I saw some fan tweet that Anderson rode like Vince Freeze for five laps. So I watched this back on TV with like real intrigue because I was like, I must have missed something. And no, like... Jason held his line and just, you know, he was Jet was clearly faster, but Anderson did a really good job of defending and reading what Jet was going to do. When Jet did finally get past Anderson, yes, it was an aggressive move, but nothing over the line. I don't really know what the issue was. Obviously, from the videos that are circulating, it looks like Jet was the aggressor after the finish. I don't know why that would be. Equally, if it was Jason, I don't understand why he would be that heated. Also, the one point that I want to clarify, which we will never get clarification on, is after Jet passed Jason, he kind of looked behind and put his hand up over the next jump. And I don't know if that was a, hey, sorry, or, hey, thank fuck you're behind me, what were you doing?
Yeah,
we will never know.
I just kind of wonder overall emotions, because you watch him again through the main, even though we ended the lap first sub 14, you think of what he's, how many times even in 250s when he would have, like say the last 2 years, he would have an error race where he had to come from way back. Of course, how, I don't want to say the word easy, but for his skill, everything, how easily he could get to a podium. And of course, that's what we've talked about in this race. And we compared it to Charlotte last year, the SMX, like, hey, he can't just come back to a podium that easily. It's the 450 class. It's the best dudes in the world. It's difficult to do it. I mean, I'm still impressed he came to fourth. But I think overall, partially track conditions, partially tougher competition. Everybody dealt with it last night. Lappers were having a hard time getting out of the way. My guess is that he was generally frustrated about how long it was probably taking him to get by each person and then got really held up on Jason. I don't know if it's just young emotion coming out, like, Jesus, you guys are like feeling like his time is being wasted or something. We'll never know. I'd love to know the interaction afterwards, but I did laugh at Jason's very aggressive helmet grab on him, giving him like almost whiplashing him of just kind of like, kid, you're not going to talk to me like that.
Very. We have a lot of storylines now. Well,
the one thing that worries me, of course, and this is nothing against Jason, but it was funny how many people I talked to. We kind of all said this after the race. The one rider I swear in the field you do not want to mess with is Jason, because he has some of the most do not give a fuck attitude at times. And hopefully he's gotten better, but we've kind of seen him in the past sort of, regardless of where he's at in a championship, he will come back at somebody, and it could be races later or anything. He's just the last person I think in the field I would want to have on my bad side, more than Barsha. I really feel like Justin, even though Barsha's got his reputation of getting into it with people, I think Barsha almost, like, you can kind of clear the air with him quicker, maybe. Does that make sense? And I don't know really if that's saying, like, Jason holds grudge. I just don't think maybe people talk to Jason after the races as much or something. But I just label Anderson as probably the one person I wouldn't want to have kind of on my bad side, because he's fast enough. He can be a problem for anybody, basically.
This is the Decal Works post-race show on Vital MX, presented by Beta and Fox Racing. 2024, it is Fox Racing's 50th anniversary year, marking 5 decades of getting after it. Rides, innovations, victories, celebrate 50 years of looking forward with Fox. Hello, future. Thank you to Fox Racing, Beta, and Decal Works. I was impressed that Chase got as far up as he did, because honestly, after the second mistake, I kind of wrote him off as, this will be a 15th place night. This will be a 14th.
Well, at one point, and I think it was even before the second mistake, so after him and Malcolm got together, I counted the first lap when they came back around the first lap for him to get back to the second to third, what you call second to third base. Well, if it was somewhere. One far end field rhythm lane, he was already over 30 seconds down on the leaders. So in my mind, I was just like, wow, that's like already quite a bit. And then the second incident happened. Speaking of which, I didn't get to go back and rewatch it, but I heard a few people kind of say this. I mean, it's all jumbled in the rhythm lane. Did Malcolm technically jump on his back, kind of?
I don't know. I've not seen any replay or video of it, so I don't know. But one part of Chase's race that I was really, like, obsessed with, because I thought it was cool, is in the rhythm where he crashed for the second time, he was stepping off of that tabletop, and he was the only guy to do it, and he was doing it consistently, and I like that stuff. I don't know if it was faster, but it was cool, because he was the only one doing it, and I like when I see people do stuff that other people aren't doing, so there's that. Eli also did well to get back to where he was. But to be honest, early on, he was struggling. And then once he kind of got lapped, he really, really picked it up. But in the early stages after his crash, he really looked out of sorts. And Chase kind of worked him. But then Eli flipped the script and became the faster of the two in the second half, because I don't know if he saw lines from AP or what happened, but he suddenly found another gear and was really good in the latter stages. So
I 100% agree. He basically just seemed to be stuck to whoever's pace was around him. So early in the race, it was the kind of guys he was passing. He was just not making progress. He literally flipped the switch when Aaron got him. And again, good on him. That's what I was saying. It's on one hand, people could complain about him racing the leaders, but I'm like, he literally latched onto AP perfect. He didn't even let, like, one lap of AP trying to get away from him. He immediately adjusted his lines, his pace. And I'm wondering, he would have been one to fun talk to afterwards, kind of that whole, again, guys maybe not realizing how racy the track was. I wonder if it literally just took somebody like AP blowing his doors off to go, oh, I can go fast. Like, there is enough traction, or it is good enough here. Because the way he instantly fixed it, it just sounds as dumb as, like, it was just a wake-up call.
Prado is staying for Anaheim 2.
I'm so excited.
To be honest, I've had a lot of Prado in my life lately, because I did an interview for Red Bull about Prado, which was 90 minutes long. So I've spoken about Prado to the death. And Here we go again. No, most interesting about Prado was after the race, I said to him, obviously massively hinting towards, I said, have you been happy with the response from the American paddock? Are you noticing that other teams are kind of recognizing what you're doing and like are just, you know, showing some interest? And obviously he knew what I was asking, but so his answer was basically irrelevant to the question, but there was a massive grin as I was asking this question, which intrigued me because the grin told me that there has been some sort of interesting top discussion behind the scenes. So there's that.
Oh, we talked about this before. Like I had this conversation with somebody this weekend. I definitely think there will be, you know, I think some people look as, oh, if he comes in 2025, they're just thinking it's a guarantee that he's coming on Austrian bike. Hell, I've talked to people, oh, he'll be here with GasCast next year. I'm like, eh, I think if he stays, it's more likely he's KTM, so he has his own gear deals. But I'm very much on the train of Yamaha or Cowie, I think, is very much a viable option at this point. I think there's you could argue reasons why each one of them could have room for him next year or would want to make a run at him. And I think the interesting part is there's so much potential. There's so much potential. It's such a, it's a little bit of a gamble, but in another breath, I don't feel like it's a gamble. You know, he's going to get there. It's just, you got to commit. Somebody's got to commit to him soon. And this also makes me wonder, you know, his MXGP results are almost going to be irrelevant to this at this point in his defense year. I'm wondering how early he gets this Supercross deal done.
Someone close to Prado who maybe doesn't know the whole picture, but knows a damn lot more than a lot of us, told me there is basically no chance that he is in America on an Austrian bike next year.
Damn.
So I don't know how true that is. No rider will be sadder to see Prado leave America than Fox Racing's Adam Cincerello, because I don't know if you've been tracking this, but they have been locked in a battle to the death ever since Anaheim 1, and they cannot get away from each other. So there's that. And also, I didn't pay close attention to this, but I think I saw some sort of tweet from RacerX's Kellen Brower, who said that AC told him that he fractured a finger at Anaheim 1 in the Prado last corner demolition derby. So I don't
know. Really?
So yep, there's that. I believe that's what it said, but like I say, I didn't kind of go in depth. I just kind of saw it in passing. Congratulations to Beta on their first 450 main event. Vital MX is proudly supported by Beta Motorcycles, which has been a family-owned company since 1905. Beta manufactures the finest enduro, trials, dual sport, and motocross motorcycles that are known for their top quality and rideability. Their newest model, the 450 RX, is the first four-stroke motocross model built by Beta. It was designed to offer a ride that is more forgiving with the rare combination of a premium performance and undeniable appeal. Check out betausa.com for more information. Benny Bloss made history by being the first rider to put a Beta in the main event, and he did it by avoiding the LCQ. So tip of the hat to everyone at Beta. Do we have anything at all to say about Malcolm Stewart or Christian Craig? No.
Oh, God. I feel for the 450 team right now.
So, all I have to say is it's unbelievable.
Well, especially after last year, you would just thought their luck would be better. Like, I just thought it wouldn't be like this. It is truly unbelievable. Like, how is it we can be three races in a row with both? Like, if one of them had three opening bad rounds, I'd understand. But for both of them to just, especially after Malcolm's heat, I'm like, oh, here we go. We're going to maybe turn it around. Not that I thought you could win a main. I just thought, okay, Malcolm's going to finally get a decent main because after this heat race. We're going to top 10. And then it just all went to hell on the first lap again.
Like Noah's Ark, we have two KTMs side by side, first and second. We have two GasGases side by side, 9th and 10th. And we have two Husqvarnas side by side, 17th and 18th. Considering it's basically the same motorcycle, the variance there is baffling. But there you go.
Derek Drake and Justin Cooper have each missed a main event, and they were ahead of Malcolm Stern and Christian Craig in the points. Cade Clayson is nipping at their heels. And real quick, speaking of Cade, hats off to Cade for making all three main events so far.
Yeah, and riding really well.
Him and I would say like your two real standout, like they're kind of on teams, but they kind of fall in that category of still privateer-ish, depending on your argument. Freddie and Cade, all three main so far. Not as I mean, Freddie's good quad, but both of them, yeah, hats off.
Moving on to 250s.
Wait.
What?
Dylan Ferrandis. We're just going to watch. Oh, man. Oh. You skip right by my guy.
Off you go.
Nothing. I just want to mention that Dylan, he's pretty much the same as realistically the first three rounds last year, but then got injured. So if we have another grand round next weekend, best start of the season for Dylan Ferrandis.
Great. On to 250s. So Nate Thrasher won. Well done. The question is, if he continues on this erratic trend of results, is that enough for him, for his stock to continue to carry weight?
In what way?
Well, just, is he still looked at as a viable option for these top teams?
Well, I think as soon as he went, I mean, he'll... I would think something like this, like he's going to retain his place at Star, for instance. Like he is, as far as I'm aware, he is up on contract this year, but I would think, you know, there's not that much of a question that he would be kept after, especially winning a main event again.
I just feel like if you're Star, you are stoked, of course, but maybe you're a little like, well, let's just see where this goes, because like, we've done this before and it doesn't really go anywhere. So well done, but let's just see how this goes, because there's no point. Like in most cases, a rider wins their first main event of the season and the reaction is we're on to something. With Nate Thrasher, I feel like it's more, yeah, great. Let's fingers crossed that this doesn't go sideways here next weekend.
Yeah, I'm definitely not sold. Like, let's see how it continues. But I mean, like I said, in a sense, your question for stock, in my opinion, he's safe, but at the same time, how long can you ride that wave? Say for another year, but at what point does it just go, okay, can he not get this done for a season?
I didn't see the Marchbanks back marker thing in real time. How late in the race was it?
Sorry, cut out. What'd you say?
I didn't see the Marchbanks back marker situation in real time. How late in the race was it?
Pretty late. Was it three laps to go? Was it Matty Jorgensen that held him up, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was the entire AJA team. No offense. Varese and Jorgensen both need to learn what a blue flag means. They both just sat in the race line all night. So no offense calling both of them out for being horrendous lappers for the night.
That was probably worse than Sexton Webb and Anderson Jett. Like, as far as controversy goes. Well, not controversy, but you know, as far as like
effect out of on line. The, yeah, effect on the race, but it's funny as it's the most glanced over because it's Matty Jorgensen and Garrett Marchbanks.
Yeah, and it's just the 250 class, isn't it? I mean, I feel like this 250 West class has kind of lost steam in the hype department quite quickly.
Yes, I'm more interested in seeing where it goes than I was at the earlier round. Like I, like a lot of people, like thought it was going to be more of an RJ show, which so far it's not turning out to be. So I'm definitely interested, but I'm very confused at the same time.
Okay, I'll give you that. But no, props to Marchbanks. And you know, we have both been on record as saying he should move to the 450s.
Literally at A1.
Were we wrong?
No, and it's... I even asked him this last night. You know, we interview somebody like, say, of his caliber before the beginning of the year has said multiple times, you know, I want to be in this championship. I want to try to win it. But you kind of hear him say that the last couple of years. And you're like, yeah, I'm sure you would like that. But we got to wait and see. But at this point, he's fairly, you know, he's firmly in the conversation, I guess you would say.
Similar,
I didn't expect to say preseason at all.
Similar to Jet in the 450 class, Jordan did really well to salvage a good situation out of something that could have been much worse. Like at one point, it looked like RJ was going to win and Jordan would be on the cusp of the top five. So for him to actually gain points on his main title rivals, a nice turnaround.
Yeah, I was impressed with Jordan. The main was definitely his weakest point of the night. He was good. Qualifying was excellent. He was smart when it started raining. He basically scented first lap. But talking to Jordan's interesting because he seems not talking, but very quietly confident to talk to him. He kind of commented, you know, it's only the second time in his career he's been red plate. But he said, honestly, the first time he had it, he was didn't even know. Like, he now looks back and knowing he knows now what it would, what it's probably going to take to carry it. I don't know, something about talking to him, he kind of that vibe you get, he believes he can do it, and he kind of is carrying himself in a way where I'm starting to believe it. Like, we talked about this last weekend. If you had to ask me title favorite right now, I think I'm going Jordan.
Yeah, I think that I am going Jordan as well.
So you're off the RJ train, your train?
I don't really know. I don't really understand this class. Like, I could still see Levi pulling it off just purely through consistency as well. Like,
realistically, Levi, it started out like at one point last night, I was like, oh, Levi's the fastest guy on track. And he was making it look easy when he was behind RJ. But then after he tossed it, his moment, his pace just died. It still was overall, when I look at the point spread, I'm like, okay, still not bad. He's second in points. He's only 8 points out of it. He's been fair, other than that pace drop, like, he has been fairly solid over these opening rounds, but that pace drop after he went down was definitely odd to me.
Yeah, but I think we saw that with a lot of riders on that track, where one mistake just kind of, it's tough to pick back up because you're out of sorts on a track that demands you to be very much in sorts.
Something that I still have a question mark with Levi. This lingers more from last year and the year before at Star. We've kind of labeled Levi as a guy that he runs a pace similar to where he starts. And that's the thing at Star. Like, if he, especially more in outdoors than Supercross, but I thought it was kind of noticeable in both, is if he starts top three, he is a top three caliber guy. But if he starts seventh or 10th, I don't know if he just gets trapped in pace easily, but even like falling back last night and getting stuck in a pace, it makes me wonder how he's going to be at a round when he gets a bad start in a main finally. Like, I don't have... It's kind of same for Jordan. Like, there's not a lot of guys in this class right now that I'm developed a lot of faith in that they can get through the pack. If anything, even though he's far back in points, Joe so far has shown me he can pass the most people.
Yeah,
I'm going well other than that, but Joe's the only one that's proven to me he can come through the pack. I don't know if I have a huge amount of faith in some of the other guys right now.
There are people who are clinging to that as a, look, Joe has been great. He's just been held back by his starts and other circumstances. My rebuttal is that is part of being a great rider and a title contender. You can't
sell
in those positions.
100%. That's why I say I hear riders that like to blame luck. And I'm like, hey, at a certain point, you are making choices. And I'm not saying this is intentional, but it's like you have made some sort of choices that have put you in bad situations. You have gone bad starts. You haven't qualified well. You've made mistakes. That's all part of it. That's all part of it. And I think that was even when we came in this year, still talking about that with Joe. Even though Joe has shown the speed, there's still this question mark of that sort of putting all the puzzle pieces together, and he seems to be missing a little bit of it still. So
RJ was one of the last top riders to jump the triple, and obviously he was out front. So I wonder how long it took him to realize that the others were doing it consistently. I wonder if the mechanics put it on the board. I wonder if he could hear it. I just wonder like what RJ's awareness was in that situation.
No, he definitely was. It was weird because, like I said, when Levi was even behind him, not that RJ's pace wasn't good, but I don't know, just RJ's riding style, I felt like he kind of hit his ceiling of what he could do on the track a little more than, like, honestly, even it was weird. It's like Garrett would be kind of up and down on pace, but like Garrett, Levi, to me, those guys just kind of had more top end pace than RJ had. RJ was really fairly solid until his big moment at the very end of the race.
Yeah, and you know what? I was thinking about this a lot. I don't come down on him for that moment because how do I even justify this?
Let's hear you defend your guy.
It's not, no, like, because what would you like? Because I was thinking the alternative is he settles for third when there is clearly much more available. And if he does that, are we not all criticizing?
No, not in this case, because RJ, the opposite, RJ is known for, he would have made points up on Jordan and instead he pissed away points. And I'm not trying to be a dick, but I'm going to be pretty straight and harsh. This is those moments right there. Like, everybody knows RJ is a try hard. Everybody knows he can go fast up the Gwinnett's Tile. We know he's in good enough shape. The question mark is, can you put your championship hat on for 5 seconds? And there's riders that we have glorified for having, you know, good perspective and thought on the races. And sometimes that's our, like on the Joe conversation, that's RJ's missing puzzle. Yeah, you can pump him up for always wanting to send it, but that's the result.
So
he's got all the other puzzle pieces. There are times where he just needs to have a championship hat on for a second.
So RJ lands off the triple and visibly backs off to take third. Like, it's visible. We're sat there going, oh, he settled for third. We're all applauding that?
No, I'm not applying it, but I'm not giving, like, and I'm not saying backing off. Like, he just did the RJ, like, I am going to full send myself into the ground and over scrubs the crap out of the double and lands totally sideways. Like, in a move that on that style track, those conditions just wasn't, like, just try hard, like, doing something the bike is not capable of handling. That he could still try to push it, but there's that kind of situation. Hey, push. Maybe they make a mistake going in the next corner. Maybe you get enough drive. Maybe they slide along the landing, but don't just basically scrub yourself into the ground.
Okay. Mitchell Oldenburg could have had a lot better night, but just circumstance, he kind of got screwed a couple of times, but he was definitely riding very well. And also props to MCR, who had one of the best throwback looks. Also props to Feld, because their animated graphic for the 50th anniversary was very cool. And like, I feel like not too long ago, the sport wasn't really up to par in that department. So credit where it's due.
I say though, I was disappointed how few teams participated in Retro Night.
Yeah, I think it's time that we just give up on these themed events, to be honest.
See, I like even F1 NASCAR, it worked well. NASCAR doesn't really do it. F1 does special liveries and stuff. I don't know. It's people get stoked on it. I love it. I just even talked to people. It seemed like the organization around this one was weak. Like, there's a lot of effort in the St. Jude's, which of course has a very good purpose. I was just really surprised how poor the Retro Night one, especially Kawasaki. They sell a 50th anniversary bike, and the best answer I could get out of somebody there was, and it was somebody who was disappointed they didn't go do it, but it's like, yeah, we did that at LASMX. Why do it again? I don't know, because the bikes are on the showroom floor and you're trying to sell them. I don't know.
F1 works because it's down to the individual team says, we are going to do something special for this race because it means something to the team. So that's the difference. This isn't, the teams kind of are like, oh no, I don't want to do that when they're told. So maybe we
in
just
in this leave case, it. I know a few teams that their OEM wouldn't let them do anything, which sucks. And that's one I got to still give a hats off to is like, for as corporate as big as Honda is, they always let all their teams, the factory team, the support teams can basically do whatever they want for nights like this.
Yep, true. Anything else from San Diego?
Just a couple nods. Like, I thought Yoder is riding fantastic this year. A couple moments on ground, but again, a little hats off to him. Wagemans rebounded quite well after a pretty horrific year at Bar X. Bar X as a whole has somewhat rebounded. Miller's doing kind of then, but Berdone's been a great fill-in. I guess one we kind of touched on, we used to do these more. I think 250s maybe were in a place, maybe we're not compared to 450. Do you have a championship pie for 250 at this point, a percentage?
No, too early. But it will be Jordan, Levi, RJ, one of those. So put me at even split for those riders.
Okay. Last one for you, kind of talking about just even Joe's situation. I mean, do we see wins out of Joe soon again, or do you think we keep kind of seeing this weird pattern?
It's overlooked that this is his fifth year in 250s. Like, really is overlooked. Even I kind of think that it's his third year. And there's not much to lean on in that time. So will we see wins out of him? Well, we've only seen one over 4 years. So I'd imagine there will be one at some point, but I don't expect him to go on a run here at any point.
Who wins the main first of these three riders, and can all three win before the season is up? Marchbanks, Shimoda, Bomer.
Oh, that's a weird group. I thought you were going to include Kitchen. No, Shimoda is the first one to win, and no, not all of them are going to win before the year's up. That's insane.
Okay. I guess the only reason I didn't include Levi is I consider Levi a for sure, and the other three I'm questioning a little bit.
Yeah, I really thought that Kenny and Levi were going to win San Diego. It really seemed to be trending in that direction. But nonetheless, that is why they run the races. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thank you to Decal Works, 1-2 in the 450 points. Thank you to Fox Racing. Thank you to Beta. Thank you to you people for listening. Another week of Monster Energy Supercross is underway. We will be back after Anaheim 2 to break down everything that happens inside the confines of Angel Stadium for the second and final time this year. Thank you for all of your support. We will see you next week.